You're listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of All Good Things, the Star Trek Universe podcast here on BQN and the Fandom Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mark White, and with me today is Captain Jeremiah Brown. How you doing, Jeremiah?
Good, Mark. How are you?
I am doing great. It's nice to have you back on. Last time we had you on was for the STLV recap.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's great to be back.
And did we scare you away? I mean...
No, I just, you know, like, yeah, so many things that a captain has to do, hard to make time for other things sometimes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, well, I heard about some of the things you were doing. So you ended up scoring some sweet tickets to the Picard premiere, is that correct?
That is correct. And let me tell you what a fabulous experience that was.
Did you go with anybody in particular?
Or? I did not. A fellow Delta Flyer Admiral of mine that I'm with was supposed to go with me and got sick and ended up not being able to go that night.
Okay.
That did not stop the fun from commencing. I actually ran into Christos in line and tons of other people from our lovely community that I got to chit-chat with and enjoy the evening with.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I'm glad you had a blast. I was insanely jealous. I wish that they still had the COVID protocol so that I could have had the digital premiere. I loved those.
Yeah, those were a lot of fun. Yeah. In fact, I had reached out and asked about those and for this season of Picard and had never heard anything. And then all of a sudden, boom, I have a ticket to LA.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, speaking of Picard, I think now it's time for Hit It, Riker.
This is the bridge. All hands to emergency escape pods.
All right, so Escape Pod, a new segment we are doing for the next 10 weeks where we are going to spend just a little bit of time at the start of each All Good Things to discuss the most recent episode of Star Trek Picard. And, you know, today we're recording on a Thursday, which the episode dropped today. And thankfully we both watched it, otherwise this would have been really awkward. But yeah, we're going to discuss a little bit of what we just saw. So, first impressions?
Another fantastic episode to what looks like it's going to be a wild ride this season. I have heard some feedback that people weren't particularly awed by it. And I think that really leads into the fact that having seen them back to back in LA, it really is a direct continuation off of episode one.
Yeah.
So it could have been aired as a 2-hour episode rather than split into two. But I have no complaints about it.
I agree. This episode, I think, I love episode one so much because it, you know, it starts with a bang and it's just like shock and awe. And you're just like, wow, like this is amazing. And then this is a continuation of the awesomeness, but it doesn't have that same sort of shock and awe quality as the first episode where you're just like, wow, this is completely different. This is where they're going. Okay, this is great. Because this is more of a continuation. Also, it seemed to go by really fast. I guess it was like 10 minutes shorter than the episode last week.
It was slightly shorter than the first one.
Yeah. Spoiler warning, they answered a couple of big questions in this week's episode. And I am so glad. I just got to point that out. If they just, like, you know what they did in Discovery where they just dragged out, like, oh, we're going to spend half the season looking for Spock, or we're going to spend, like, the entire season trying to figure out what the Red Angel deal is, and we're going to, you know, all of this, who caused the burn, you know, it's just a whole season of, like, oh, what is it? And then it's just a big, wet fart at the end when it, you know, you figure it out. It's just like, it's so anticlimactic. So I'm really glad, like, okay, we get who Beverly's son is, like the son of. We get that in this episode. And who Raffi's handler are. There. Bam, bam. Figured it out. It's episode two. Okay, done. Next. Great. I am happy. I like the way it panned out. I mean, if it was somebody other than Worf as the handler, that would have been very confusing. And also, why?
I mean, who else could it be?
Yeah, right? Picard's son. I don't know why her son... Well, with Picard, Beverly's son would have a British accent, unless he went to, like, a British boarding school, because he's not born British.
Well, all I can say without going into spoiler territories is that will be addressed.
Okay.
I've had the fortune, I had the good fortune to see beyond episode two mm-hmm. while I was in LA at yeah. a after event. It's going to be addressed.
Okay. But can you answer me this question? And it's kind of spoiler, not spoiler. And that is, we know the answer. The answer to this episode two, who he is, right?
Right.
Then I'm pleased. That's all I yep. needed to know. I don't want it there to be some sort of like three episodes, four episodes, and they're like, well, actually, no. See, now there's this thing and Sela and this whole time. No, I don't want it to be any of that.
No, so. he is exactly who we think he is. It's absolutely no doubt about it. And it is addressed full frontal. It's all going to come out. And I think that kind of goes back to what we said in a minute ago about the how episode one was such a high and this one was kind of the downwards yeah. of that episode.
Yeah.
So far from what I've seen is the season's going to, at least up to episode four, it's peaks and valleys.
I'm and cool it's going to
go right back up.
I'm cool with yeah, that. I mean, whatever.
It's really going to, this season is really a roller coaster, and I cannot thank Terry Metalis enough for what he's giving us. And I hope that we are just beginning to see Trek under his command.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see what else he does and if he continues with the franchise.
My one complaint about this, and Christo's giving me crap online about it already, but that it's not episodic. And the reason I'm saying that, like, it's not wrapped up in a nice bow, because I love it so much. I just want to be able to, like with Strange New Worlds, pop in, watch this episode or that one or whatever out of order. But I can tell already that there's going to be no way possible to do that with this season of Picard. And that kind of stinks for me, because I do want to be able to enjoy this like you can with a film. You can put on a film that's 2 hours and you can watch it like sporadically. But if you're going to watch season three of Picard, it seems like, well, there goes my week, month, you know, whatever, to watch it, you know. So that's my only complaint.
It's definitely going to be a 10-hour next-gen movie.
But also it's awesome. So
it is awesome.
It's a complaint, but not really, because it is awesome and whatever. Right. And I will totally sit for that 10 hours and love every second of it.
Absolutely. And the dynamic with the chemistry between Picard, Riker, and Seven of Nine, just what a trio that we didn't know we ever needed.
I got to say, in defense of Todd Sashwick and his Captain Shaw, I did praise him last episode of All Good Things, and I did say what a fantastic job he did as a villain and as a very hateable character. He did a great job, because it takes a lot of skill to pull off that kind of gravitas and energy within only a few scenes. And so I did praise him for that. But I will say in this episode, I hated him less. So that's a good thing.
I'm trying not to go into spoiler territory with him.
Does he get blown out in airlock? That'd be great.
The backstory he has?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. That's good.
Wow. They've done something that they're rehashing things that we've already experienced in prior series episodes in the past multiple times with a fresh new take.
That's cool. I'm down with that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Terry seems to do well.
Yeah. And while you're not going to necessarily root for Shaw, you're going to understand him.
Yeah. Well, I would love to spend pretty much every episode of All Good Things discussing Picard, but I do suppose our listeners have also tuned in to pivot to Voyager, which is your expertise. So
that's why I'm here.
Very glad we have you on to discuss Voyager. And do you want to introduce the topic this week and tell us what we're going to be talking about?
Absolutely. This week we'll be discussing the Voyager episode, The Thaw. The crew attempts to rescue three aliens in stasis from a bizarre computer program that is based on fear.
That was, I found that synopsis online. I'm like, this is the most bare bones synopsis for that episode.
It is. I wish that Netflix still had their synopsis up so I could see what theirs was.
Yeah, it was probably better. Anyway, I hadn't seen this episode in a very long time. I remember seeing it when I was a kid, and I remember it freaking me out. And I've done rewatches of Voyager multiple times as an adult. I do love the show. I remembered that, you know, this episode, and it doesn't rank among my favorites, but I think it's because it's a little scary. So I don't go back to the scary ones that often.
You know, when you mentioned this episode to me last week, my first reaction was, ew, the thaw? Really? Voyagers move along home? Oh, I have to watch that? Because it's definitely one I skip. I will admit it. I skip it quite often.
Guys, this is the Voyager guy. There's no bigger Voyager guy. He literally owns an episode of Voyager that he purchased from Paramount. Like, this is the Voyager, and he skips this episode! Oh my god.
I do.
My mind.
But you know, I rewatched it last night, and other than the one thing that bugs me about the episode, it's really good.
Yeah.
Once you get past the clowns, it's really good. Like, the science is good, the writing is good.
Oh, they love the writing.
It's just the damn Cirque du Soleil bits that.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, again, it's scary.
So, one of the things I found interesting about this episode was the choice of away team. They sent down the chief engineer and then Ensign Kim. What I thought was cool about it is B'Elanna to me represents fearless, Klingon warrior woman. And Kim, clarinet playing, a little bit scared of space, newbie. And so you have the yin and the yang there, two different sides of the fear coin going down. And then he's the one that gets, Harry, he's the one that gets stuck with the clown. And so that was also an interesting choice to leave him behind. And he had to face some demons of his own. What did you think about that?
I thought that was a very good usage of those two characters and that pairing that actually, and here it's towards the end of season two, but it throws all the way back to Caretaker when they were initially set up as a kind of a duo with their back and forth relationship from their time in the Ocampa compound.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah. So, this was a good example of the show writers continuing on what had been established prior. Mm-hmm. You know, the Berman era didn't want any, as little continuity as possible, as far as serialization goes. And this picks it back up at the end of the second year.
Now, I don't know if you picked up on this or not. I picked up on this for the very first time this rewatch today. The clown says some things to Harry Kim, and I got a little bit of a, like, homoerotic kind of vibe from the way he was, I don't know, planning to torture him. Is it just me? Am I just reading into it? But there seemed to be a little something.
No, the clown definitely wanted a piece of Harry and whatever piece he could get.
Yeah.
But he wanted all of it.
It's really sad that I don't think we got too many moments in this show where Harry got, like, I don't know, his shirt ripped off or something like they used to do to Kirk.
Yeah, no, he really didn't. I think we got some Harry nipple in... That doesn't sound right. We got some Harry Kim nipple in Non Sequitur.
Okay.
Maybe a little skin in the shoot, but I think that's about it for him.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I bring this up is actually because he was poised to be written off the show until, they, which magazine came out with calling him one of the sexiest men on TV.
It's actually not true.
No.
No, complete falsehood.
Really? Well, so yeah, tell me.
Complete urban legend. Jennifer Lean was always the one slated to leave the show.
Well, this is why
Harry,
you're here.
Garrett was never in jeopardy of being written off of the show at the end of season three. It was always going to be Jennifer Lean.
Okay, but was he still nominated to be one of the sexiest people on TV?
Yes, he was still on the sexiest people list. That is absolutely true, but it had nothing to do with the shakeup at the end of season three.
It was definitely true for me. I mean, that was, without a doubt, probably my first, like, Asian man crush.
Yeah.
Was Harry Kim. And meeting Garrett at STLV and just seeing how super friendly he is with the fans, and I even told him I had a crush on him, he didn't give a shit. Just like, he probably gets that all the time. But such good humor of a person. The Trek community is so lucky to have him. I mean, he's just great.
Absolutely we are. Garrett is a wonderful human being, a sweetheart, and I am proud to call him a friend. Yeah. And I've gotten to really know him over the years through conventions and meeting. And then being part of the Delta Flyers, it's great to be a part of his circle in any capacity.
Yeah. So, talking about this episode and rewatching, like I mentioned at the start, this episode kind of freaked me out when I was younger. And it wasn't the clowns. I was never afraid of clowns. I think it was the idea of just being trapped and helpless in that environment with a psychopath. Sort of like being caged. You know what I mean? I think that's kind of what freaked me out a little bit. Obviously, like, the beheading of the characters is pretty traumatic. So, yeah, that's kind of what freaked me out. And when I, upon the rewatch, obviously as an adult, it freaks me out less. But it's still one of those things where it's just like, you know? So, what are the parts of this episode that make you feel, I guess, a little icky, a little afraid, seeing as this is our Fear Factor series?
Well, you know, the whole carnival thing freaks me out. Clowns in particular. We've always been the weird kid and happy, bright, shiny things I've always kind of strayed from outside of the Star Trek world. And like the creepy, more morbid, you know, horror themed type things. So, you know, the clowns and all of that, that is what freaked me out the
really?
Most.
Really? Okay.
Yes. As well as when the clown rapidly ages Harry. As one of Harry's fears of being old and dying. That is one of my mortal fears of my own.
Yeah.
So those two combined, I'm just like, oh, God, no.
And then when he's the little baby, it just reminded me, when he's the baby and he starts tossing him, I'm like, ah!
There's a photo floating around somewhere of a friend of mine from STLV where I had their Ensign, baby Ensign Kim, and accidentally dropped it. And the baby is falling mid-photo.
Oh, poor baby Ensign Kim.
Yes, thank you. Know, luckily, just a prop baby, not a real baby, listeners.
Whatever happened to the prop baby from that episode?
You know, I'm sure it's in somebody's house. Unfortunately, it's not in mine.
Yeah.
You know, anything used on Voyager, you know, send my way.
Oh, man.
For all I know, it could be with the salamanders from Threshold. Those are sitting in Michael Westmore's garage.
Are they seriously?
Yeah, at least one of them is.
Oh, wow. What, so, I know you have a number of props there from Voyager. What are some ones you want to shout out that you have that are of note?
I have an isolinear chip that Robbie McNeil stole from the set.
No way. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's a yellow isolinear chip. Not for sure exactly where he acquired it. You know, if he pulled it out of a relay somewhere, you know, if it was on the bridge in engineering.
Yeah.
But he typed it, and then it became mine. one of my favorites. I've got a phaser, Type 2 phaser from the set that is signed by Garrett. Absolutely love it. And then I have a fabric swatch from a nightgown that Roxanne Dawson wore.
Oh, wow.
Not to mention the couch.
The couch. The captain's couch. I love that. Yeah, that is. Are you sitting on it now or no?
I am not. I had better signal in my home office than I do the ready room.
Okay. Yeah, that is so cool. No, I was actually going to ask you about a phaser, whether or not you had a phaser. I think that'd be a pretty cool prop to have.
I do. It's I have several phasers, but that is my only screen-used phaser.
Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, I had, you know, I had a Playmates phaser, but the one I got was actually Captain Picard's phaser, which wasn't the standard remote control one. It was like a little tiny, like a mouse for a computer size.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've got that one, which I don't see anybody else having. I've never seen somebody else that had one of those, so.
I haven't seen one of those in years, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, so that's what, I mean, it's not a prop, but it's one of my favorite little trinkets from Star Trek that I own.
Hey, there is no wrong answer when it comes to collecting.
Yeah. Well, Harry, going back to Harry, he was afraid of hospitals and seeing people in surgery and stuff in childhood. I found that whole part kind of interesting because I'm wondering, it is still, what is it, the 24th century at that point. You wouldn't expect to walk into any kind of a hospital surgical environment and see, like, blood or guts or anything like that. Like,
you wouldn't, but I will remind you of the episode of DS9 where Bashir and Jake Sisko were at that battlefield hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And how gory it was.
True.
And they mentioned, the clown had mentioned, that Harry's memory of that was a relief mission his parents took him on.
Okay. Well, thinking about that, is there a fear from childhood that you still struggle with, or have you gotten over most of them?
I have a really weird one of being abandoned. I don't know where it came from, but I had a reoccurring nightmare when I was little about being abandoned in a grocery store, that I would then end up in a parking garage, which was weird because the grocery store that the dream was centered around didn't have a parking garage. And then being chased by a cloaked figure.
Huh.
And I still have a little bit of anxiety with that. If I'm out with a group of people and suddenly find myself separated from them without knowing where they are, that initial panic of being abandoned in some place scary comes flooding back immediately.
Yeah. That's interesting, because thinking about this episode, it's like, When I was mentioning that when I was a kid, like, that was one of the things that scared me about this episode, is that sort of being alone and caged there with that psychopath. And that's kind of, you know, where your head's at. But I don't think there's anything weird about that fear. I think that fear is something that people, a lot of adults have, of abandonment. And not just kids, but, you know, how many times in our lives have people sort of just walked out of our lives, seemingly without much reason or notice, and you're left scratching your head and you're like, but we were friends. Like, what happened?
That's very true.
Very true. And that can be extremely traumatic. So, yeah, no, I definitely think that's a real fear. And yeah, I battle with that one myself. I mean, that one's not an easy one to get over. Can you get over that? I don't think you can get over that.
I don't think so. But I think that's also, at the same time, that's the beauty of being a Trekkie and having this amazing, wonderful extended family across the world.
Yeah.
We may not see each other or talk to each other for long periods at a time, but we're never going to leave one another.
Yeah. Well, I had, when I was a kid, a fear of falling. And it was often, I was like in a car and the car would go off a cliff or something, and I'd be trapped in the car. Again, being trapped in something. And the car would, like, go off a cliff or something, and I wouldn't be able to get out or whatever. So heights have always scared me, like, really bad. Being up on, you know, tall ladders, or, like, on, you know, if somebody lives on, like, the, you know, sixth or eighth floor of a building and they're like, come out to the balcony. I'm like, nah, all set.
Yeah. I am right there with you, Mark. And I have to ask you about ladders. Is where do you draw the line of the ladder? Because if I have to step on a stepladder more than the first step, I don't do it. I'll literally leave light bulbs burnt out in my house until somebody come over and change it.
I'm okay for maybe like 10 feet or maybe 15. I'm getting better. Where I work now, I am constantly having to deal with heights. I am on large equipment that hoists me up into the air constantly, and sometimes I'm up, you know, multiple floors, strapped into like a harness thing, and getting over that, like, I mean, I still don't sometimes. Sometimes it's still too much for me, where I'll ride up and I'll glance at what I need to see, and then be like, okay, I'm done. And I'll just come immediately down because I just can't, you know, sometimes I just can't. But I try to push myself always. And I think that's what you have to do with fear, is confront it. And I think you got that from this episode too, where that is, you know, how eventually you get over things. Is just keep putting yourself in a situation where you have to deal with it. And eventually the fear will get smaller and smaller and smaller. It is getting a little bit easier for me, but still, I think even within the last couple of weeks, I've, you know, gone up pretty high and then been like, nope, and come right back down. Like, not going to happen. I'm not going to stay up here. I'm not going to, you know, worry about this count. What I'll do is I'll get somebody else to count this for me, because I just can't do this.
I completely understand with that.
I try.
You try. That's the important thing. Sometimes I won't even try. It's like, yeah. I get that initial rush of inside of me, and it's like, no, can't even do it. I've already gotten in my head too much.
Yeah. Well, this episode's flying by. Let's already we're into a portion of assimilations and regenerations, which is all good things, ups and downs. And things that we like, we assimilate, and things that we don't are sent back to the Borg regeneration chamber. So one of the things that I loved in this episode was the use of the Doctor as the hostage negotiator. This was season two. I mean, we've pretty much only seen the Doc in sickbay. So this was his chance to get out of there.
Great usage of him. Sometimes I wish we'd have kept him in sickbay.
Oh, because, no!
Not because I don't love the Doctor or Robert Picardo.
Yeah, don't tell Bob Picardo.
No, I love him and I love the Doctor. But when the Doctor got his mobile emitter, it essentially clipped Kes's wings right there. That suddenly began the trend of her being even more underused.
Yeah.
Because now their chief medical officer can go anywhere. But at this point in time, using him in that capacity was a great usage.
I think I knew this about you, but I think you're hinting at it now that you have maybe an unpopular opinion about Kes.
It's a double-edged sword. I think that Kes could have been a great character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that was a big missed potential. Did I miss her when she left? Absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
Because, I mean, 7 of 9. I wouldn't trade 7 of 9 for all the Latinum in the Alpha Quadrant.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So, had we not gotten 7 of 9, I would have loved to have seen what we could have done further with Kes. But that's not what happened, and I like what happened.
Okay. So for Kes, for me, I think they just did Jennifer Lean bad with the character in general. They made her like 12, which is creepy enough as it is. They partnered her with Neelix, I liked her better than Neelix. Listen, I will right now, you can, mark my words. I did like her character way more than I ever liked Neelix. I mean, Neelix to me is the Jar Jar of Trek, and I will die on that hill. I am so not a Neelix fan. If he's on the screen, I kind of want to fast forward and get out of his scenes. Now, it doesn't say the actor. This is nothing against the actor, who is incredible. He's been in a bunch of things that I enjoyed. But that character, no thanks.
Pass. Somebody hold my Leola root, because I'm a big Neelix lover.
What do you love about him?
I love his energy. I love the oddness that he brings to the Voyager crew, because he's not like anybody else on the ship. And mm-hmm. He's not afraid to be himself, other than the cringe factor of, his child bride. I absolutely adore Neelix. I can't say enough good things about him. I think he's hilarious. I think he's a great foil for Tuvok. And I think that he gives some really great advice throughout the series to his shipmates and is really somebody that you can depend on and be your sounding board to, that's going to keep everything in confidence and don't have to worry about him, going and telling somebody else about what you were talking about.
Yeah.
I think he's Voyager's counselor in a big capacity.
Yeah. Good point. And, I think a lot of my dislike for the character mostly comes from the first like 3-4 seasons, because really towards the end of the show, I think they're writing him better. I will say that as somebody like I said, my least favorite character on the show, I will admit that he does get better with time and they write him better. But that's true for a lot of characters in Trek.
It is. But once they break him and Kes up, that's when he starts getting good.
Yeah. He was done taking bubble baths in Janeway's quarters or whatnot.
I love Neelix's bubble baths. In fact, I did a video. I took that scene from Caretaker and I overlaid the audio from Pretty Woman, the bathtub.
Oh, no, you didn't.
I did, and I made Felix, Julia Roberts, and Tuvok Richard Gere and called it Pretty Talaxian.
Oh, my God, I gotta see this.
Yeah, I'll have to send it to you.
Well, also, big shout out to this episode for the makeup and costumes. Now, all the background characters in this had multiple layers of makeup. They had their alien makeup to give them the head ridges or whatever for that species. But then on top of that, they had all his clown makeup adhered also. So I don't know how many hours are in the makeup chair, but the makeup looked fantastic. I'm glad they did it that way and didn't just have them be like humans with some face paint. They were all aliens with some face paint. And so I got to say that was one of the things I loved about this episode.
I couldn't help but notice on this rewatch that this was the first usage of a holographic version of Janeway. And it got me thinking, is this the predecessor for Holo Janeway? Did Prodigy get their inspiration from Voyager in this instance? Something to think about. Regardless, I loved it. Just another version of Janeway done impeccably by Kate. How can you go wrong?
When I first read that notes here, I was kind of scratching my head. I was like, I don't know. But then I processed, and I'm thinking about it. And 100%, like, this episode had to have been on someone's watch list to come up with that idea for not only the use of Holo Janeway, but also, like, her big grand speech at the end to Fear, which I 100% could see her making to, like, Dahl or any of the characters on the Protostar, that same speech. Like, that is Janeway, like, talking directly. She's talking to the clown, but really, she's talking to the audience, and she's telling the audience about Fear. So I love
absolutely.
That.
It's definitely something I want to pick Aaron Watke's brain about, especially because I know that he kind of shares the same sick sense of humor about the Threshold Salamanders as I do. And we had some pretty good laughs in LA about the Threshold Easter eggs in Prodigy. So this is definitely a question I'm going to be asking him next time we speak.
He's another one of those people that have been put in charge of a Star Trek series that 100% deserve to be there and sit in that captain's chair, because he has quite a love of the franchise, and it comes across.
It does. I've told Aaron multiple times, both online and in person, I came for Janeway and I stayed for everything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had some regenerations here as well. One of the things right at the beginning, that first scene. So Harry Kim's playing his clarinet and then somebody's banging on the wall like, hey man, can you keep it down? You know, oh, check out the chick on channel 12. You know, it's like that whole thing. It's like, what? No, this is space. This is like a starship. I mean, they said that the liquid or the fluid conduits running through the walls conduct the sound. Really?
Yeah, that I have to agree with you on this, especially considering that this is pre-Enterprise E. Voyager was the most advanced ship in the fleet when it launched. Mm-hmm. So she's barely 2 years out of dry dock, and you're telling me that Starfleet Corps of Engineers hasn't perfected soundproofing between crew quarters?
Yeah. Regenerate.
Regenerate.
Also, Tom comments in that same scene, this ship was built for combat performance? Since when? Voyager is literally a science vessel. Built for exploration.
And, yeah, never intended for combat. Proved herself as a long-range tactical vessel in the end, but at this point in time, Voyager was designed as a limited-range science vessel.
Yeah.
Definitely not combat. The writers, don't think they consulted their season 2 writer's Bible when they got to this one.
Well, do you have any regeneration?
I do, and I kind of touched on this earlier with the campiness of the whole circus theme. I really think that we could have kept the circus theme and made it darker.
Mm-hmm.
With Fear, you got something that is inherently scary to a lot of us clowns. Amp that up a little bit higher and make it a darker environment, especially since the clown is holding those refugees hostage in their stasis pods.
Yeah.
The campiness of it is what nearly ruined the episode for me and why I haven't revisited it in such a long time.
Yeah.
For me, that equates to the campiness of Move Along Home from DS9, which I loathe.
I thought we were going to say A La Moraine. Does nobody hate A La Moraine? I mean,
that's the same episode.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the episode.
A La Moraine is the song, and now it's in my head.
I just call it A La Moraine. I just call it the A La Moraine episode.
Yeah. But no, I was thinking earlier that there was the Next Gen episode with Loaxana Troy and Alexander in the mud bath.
Mm.
that was the level of campiness of the clown environment. Yeah. And it just, no.
I don't want this episode to pass without us mentioning another TNG episode, The Most Toys, because that, again, has this level of just creepiness to it that I think comes across in this episode as well. Now, different plots, but you have this sort of cartoonishly evil character collecting people, collecting beings.
Yes.
And that's what we have in a little bit in this episode as well.
There's a Picard novel that centers around Rios and dealing with the Collector's Guild.
Really?
And that level, that, yeah, I can't remember the name of it. It's a good novel, but that sense of creepiness from the Collector, very well portrayed in the novel as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, yeah, Christos is going to love you for bringing up the novels. Well, we've got some trivia. And, man, this trivia is for Amy. You know, you're on the cruise right now, Amy, but when you hear this, you'll get a kick out of it. We're going to do a series. Don't worry, Amy. We're going to do a series on this. The writer of this episode's teleplay was former Star Trek The Next Generation scribe Joe Manosky, who is living and working in France when he wrote the script. He previously helped to develop the story of Star Trek Voyager's first season episode. What, how do you pronounce that?
Cathexis. I think it's Cathexis. I can't say it now.
That one.
That one.
In collaboration with supervising producer Brennan Braga, and would hereafter return to Star Trek as a staff writer, serving as a writer-producer on Voyager from its third to seventh seasons. It's well known around All Good Things that most of us, we all love Joe Manosky episodes. And so I think there's a series coming from All Good Things where we will discuss all things Joe Manosky. Just saying. It's going to happen at some point.
Fascinating. I think I'd like those. Yeah. The episode's opening scene, in which Harry Kim and Tom Paris hold an idle conversation before Chakotay calls them to the bridge, was filmed as part of another episode, Death Wish, but later edited out and reused here due to its genetic nature. This happens quite often in Star Trek.
Really?
It does. They will either have to film additional to fill mm-hmm. for time, or recycle something that was cut to fill for time, especially in an instance like this where it was generic.
This was a cutting room floor scene, huh? And they just sort of like, oh, well, you used that one.
Yeah, they've already paid for it, so you know, don't have to
yeah.
have extended cost when you can just copy paste something in, and audience never knows.
Yeah, that was
until
cool.
we know.
So that the whole scene I was complaining about at the beginning that was supposed to be for Death Wish. I got to rewatch Death Wish now.
It's a good one.
Well, according to Marvin Rush, finding the right actor to play the clown was imperative. Casting was everything, Rush said. If we got that one choice wrong, forget it. Throw the whole thing in the trash. It wouldn't have worked at all. The character had to be ridiculously over the top, completely self-absorbed, psychotic, and fearful as well. He is fear in all of its forms. He had to be able to leap from one emotion to the next on a beat. It was a very demanding role, and I agree. They've got the perfect actor to play that role.
They did. He was excellent in it. Great performance and really, really sealed in the creep factor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. He's so creepy.
Continue with Marvin Rush. Marvin was pleased to learn that Michael McKean had expressed interest in appearing as the clown. When I heard he was going to do it, I relaxed, Rush recalled. I knew it would work. He was perfect for it.
An unusual casting choice was made for the extras of this episode. To lend a certain mood to several scenes, Jerry Taylor related, we hired a lot of people from the Cirque du Soleil as background, she elaborated. We hired them as background performers to provide a very strange sort of carnival-like atmosphere. Now, I liked all the background actors. I know that's your complaint about it, but I liked them.
You know, it's not the actors that I complain about. It was just the, you know,
campiness.
They just creeped me out. The campiness. But I agree that hiring the Cirque du Soleil actors was brilliant for the direction that they went.
Yeah.
They weren't just actors. They were actors whose background was that environment, and it showed.
I wonder about the little person that's in it, that woman. She had some lines, and I love her little personality. Like, she's, at first you think she's, like, sweet and, like, helpful and nice, and then you see she goes behind their back and starts talking to, like, you know, the evil clown dude, and you're like, oh, she's sinister too.
I absolutely loved her. Yeah. She was the henchman of the episode.
Yeah, she was cool. So props to whoever that actress was. You did great.
Absolutely. To show Janeway conquering her fear at the end of this scene, the episode's last shot of the clown is a close-up that fades to black, representing fear disappearing. That's one of two key moments in the show. Marvin Rush, who devised the image, commented, "The first is when the projection of Janeway appears on the set, walks over to the clown, and circles around him, closing in on him. Her speech, where she talks about the nature of fear, and the final fade to black, basically we spent the whole episode getting those two moments."
That moment was Shakespearean. It was incredible.
It was. It was just another in the library of epic Janeway moments. Yeah. And it's a classic. Her performance, Kate's performance alone, is masterful. And the writing behind it was brilliant. That was I don't have enough good things to say about it.
I have to admit, like, I try with All Good Things to skip around the franchise. I really, really do. I make it a point I want All Good Things to be everybody's show. I want people that like the original series to tune in. I want people that like Voyager to tune in, Deep Space Nine, across the board. So I make it a point to jump around. But admittedly, like, in my off time, I do gravitate more towards TNG, but watching this, I was just kind of like overcome with like a hell yeah with that speech at the end. And I just forgot how really, and this is early on too, how good the show could be when it was good. And absolutely. It makes me want to watch more Voyager, and I'm shocked. I didn't think the thaw was going to make me want to watch more Voyager, but it definitely has.
And that just goes to show how powerful of a show it can be, that one of the weakest episodes can inspire you to want to watch more.
Yes.
You know, it goes for all Star Trek. Even when it's bad, it's good.
Mm. Absolutely. Well, final thoughts?
We made it through a rewatch of the thaw and enjoyed it, surprisingly. And maybe learned a little bit something about our own fears.
Yeah, absolutely. I was so glad to jump in and watch Voyager again. I have a really bad memory. I'm notorious for that. So I literally was like, I knew I wanted you on. And so I wanted to pick a Voyager episode for you. And I found this in sort of the... We have a long list of episodes that we haven't covered yet under different series topics. Like, this is Fear Factor, so there's a bunch of scary episodes. And so it was in there, and I was like, oh, we'll do that one. But I honestly had no idea what it was about when I picked it. I was just like, oh, here's Fear Factor. Let's just do that one. You know, let's do this episode, The Thought. And it started, and I was like, oh, this one, oh. And then I didn't think I was going to like it, and I watched it. And, you know, gosh darn it, I ended up liking the episode, so cool.
Yeah, you know, until I rewatched it myself last night, I had a list a mile long of everything I was going to complain about that I remembered. And I got done with it, and I'm like, oh, throw that out the airlock, because, man, that was a fun episode.
Yeah. So, Jeremiah, what are we going to be talking about next week?
Next week, Mark, we're going to be talking about the Time Travel Series Part 5, Star Trek The Animated Series Yesteryear.
Yes, I was shocked when I looked at the list and I was like, we've been doing, this is now the fifth time travel episode of Star Trek, and we're just now getting to Yesteryear? That's a pretty big one.
I have to say, I've not fully immersed myself into the world of the animated series. So I've not seen this episode, so I am excited to review this and discuss it.
What I want for you is to take your preconceived notions of the animated series and just package them in a little package and put them away in a closet and bury it, because,
you know, from what I've watched, I loved it.
Yes. They wrote it. I mean, it was supposed to be like a kid's show, but they wrote it as really like a continuation of the original series. And it's what they would have done if they had any kind of a budget in the 60s.
Yeah, no, I've caught that from what I have seen. I think I've seen 4 or 5 episodes, but I couldn't tell you the names of them. But I have enjoyed them immensely. So you've given me an excuse to go back and actually take this journey.
Yesteryear is one of my favorites. I have to admit, I put on... I know I watch TNG a lot, but I do put on the animated series a lot because I'll put it on before bed and literally just like lower the volume, whatever. It's Star Trek. It's on my TV. And then I'll fall asleep with Star Trek happening. And I honestly don't care what happens. Like, you know, if I'm awake, like I could watch the episode. But if I fall asleep, I don't really care. But this is a good episode that if I had put it on around bedtime, I would watch it all the way through.
See, I'll do the same with Voyager because it's comfort. So I will go to sleep watching Voyager. Or else I have a thing with audiobooks. So I go to sleep a lot of nights listening to a Star Trek audiobook.
I get worried with Voyager putting that on before bed because Voyager to me, even more than TNG, Voyager to me is like Buck Rogers action adventure kind of show. Like week after week, they are like having battles, space battles, and like their ship being taken over, them taking over ships. You get the phage happening with those aliens, and it's just like there's a lot. And so a lot of explosions. I don't know. When I think of Voyager, that's what I think of. Like, they battled all the way through the Delta Quadrant. So,
and that's funny, and it's true. And at the same time, on that same note, for me, Voyager is, you know, like a nice, warm, snuggly blanket.
You can fall asleep in the chaos. I love that about you.
Yes. Yes, it's just, you know, Voyager's home for me. So, you know, consoles exploding, you know, ship shaking, I sleep through it all.
Do you have a favorite character? Is it Janeway?
It is Janeway.
Okay.
But ultimately, it is Janeway. I mean, I love her. I mean, I have been physically branded by Janeway. Yes. But if I have to pick a non-Janeway, it is B'Elanna Torres.
Really? Oh, that's cool. Yes.
I love B'Elanna. I relate a lot to her and the conflict, inner turmoil, especially, you know, battling two halves of yourself. Somebody that has my own struggles with mental health, that was a big relatable issue that I recognized with B'Elanna and really resonated with. So, yeah, she would be my non-Janeway favorite Voyager character.
I think for me, well, the Doctor, for sure.
The Doctor.
When I was a kid, I found him really relatable. Here is a guy that doesn't seem to really like other people. He is somebody that everybody, I guess, doesn't think a lot of. And they sort of treat him in that way, especially in the beginning. And, you know, he is capable of so much more than what people think of him, you know, at face value. And I think that they grow to understand his abilities through the course of the show. And he has a really great arc. And I love Robert Picardo as an actor. He's just so hilarious. Not even trying to be.
He's a genius. And yeah. I love the Doctor as well. I also love how he landed his role on Voyager by improvising, "I'm a doctor, not a light bulb" line, and having no context of the fact that that was a DeForest Kelly thing. He had no idea, and that is how he landed that role.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yes, that's so great.
Yes.
Well, we would love to hear what you thought of today's episode and hope you'll join our Facebook group, the BQN Collective, to continue our discussion there. You can also tweet your thoughts at AllGoodPod. Please follow the network on Twitter and Instagram at BQN Podcasts. We've also partnered with our friends at the Fandom Podcast Network, where you can find us by searching their master feed. So, Jeremiah, where can people find you when you're not having dreams of stabbing clowns?
Mark, you can find me over on Twitter at Captain Jeremiah. However, they misspelled my name, and instead of an H at the end, it's a 1. And if you are into some Voyager stop-motion animation, you can find me on TikTok at Captain Jeremiah Brown, and it is spelled correctly there. Mark, where can listeners hone their sensors to find you?
Well, they can find me in a few places. I spend a lot of time on the BQN Collective Facebook page. They can also find me on Twitter at MarkWhite207. And if they become a patron of the network on Patreon, they can listen to my show, It's Green, and it's really cool. So please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a star rating and written review. It helps others to find the show. You can also follow the entire network's podcast with our master feed by searching BQN. That way you won't miss any of our fine shows like Union Federation, Galaxy Class, History with the Zalagis, Infinite Diversity, Mickey's Marvels, Sasquatch, What's a T-Bev, and Trekspert's Quiz. Man.
At this time, we would like to thank our associate producers, Mahendran Radhakrishnan and Tim Cooper. A special thanks to Graham Kelly for our opening and closing music, and Mark White for our artwork each and every week.
Yay! If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. We will add you to the Hive Mind Facebook group so you can enjoy It's Green, Amy's Math Moments, and other network perks. With a monthly subscription of $5 or more, you can join our meetings on the Hive Mind Roundtable discussion on the second Saturday of each month. Visit patreon.com/BQN to get all the details and watch your messages. Thank you for listening. We hope you'll join us as we continue to search out
all good things.